Today at Fearless Wealth, I have an amazing friend of mine, Lori, and I have known her, for a long, long, long time, more so from a distance. And the last, I don't even know what is time, we've gotten a little bit closer, and our conversation would get more in-depth, and we would connect more. She's been going through this amazing transformation. We will be talking about alcoholism. We'll be talking about belief systems of, when you're being told that if you're artistic, you're not supposed to learn in academic ways. And a big portion of this podcast is about addiction, about the demon of alcohol, the spirit of alcohol, and how she overcame this, and all the questions that I could imagine from my side, as someone who doesn't have any relationship to alcohol. So, yes, let's get in on it. Welcome, everyone, at Fearless Wealth. And today with us, we have my magical witch with majestic hair. I'm so sad y'all can't see it. Today, all the way from overseas. Tell us about you, Lori.
Yeah, I'm coming to you from Scotland tonight. It's amazing here, but it's getting cold now. Winter's coming, which I love. It's my favorite season, I think.
Yeah. Can we pause and see how sexy that accent is?
Yeah.
So good.
You like it?
I love it so much.
Really? Oh, wow.
I love it so much.
I think a lot of people tend to like over exaggerate the Scottish accent, and it's quite funny, but I love your accent as well.
I feel like I don't have an accent.
Yeah.
But everyone's like, yeah, you have an accent. I'm like, no, I don't.
You do. And it's kind of like muddled with lots of different things in there, which makes it really endearing. It's really nice.
Tell us, how are you? What are you up to? What has been keeping you up in life and occupied?
Yeah. So obviously, just going through the whole shenanigans of the world right now, but it's led me to start studying again, which is something I have. You know, I had this narrative for such a long time that I wasn't very academic. Like my whole life, from a young age, I was always told, oh, you're such a creative person, you know? Never academic. And so I never thought for a million years I'd be able to go back to school and study and do it well. And I'm studying now.
And so when people would say, like, you're such a creative person, would that equal back then, like, that you're bad at learning or, like, yeah, don't enjoy learning?
Oh, yeah. Shit. I mean, school targeted me as, like, the words that they would use around me were, like, a distraction, a nuisance, you know, just a kind of annoying. I spent a lot of time outside the classroom because I just didn't understand what they were talking about. You know, that kind of generic learning of school, you know, the sort of, this is the way everyone learns it from left to right and that's it. There was nothing outside of that. So because my brain doesn't work like that, I just was always either acting up or trying to ask questions, and they always just put it down as, oh, she's not intelligent, she's not clever, you know. And they would sort of push me into doing something like, you know, maybe you should be a hairdresser or something with your hands. And so I just allowed that narrative to sit in my mind for my entire life, you know. So, but then, you know, as I got older, I'm like, hang on a second, I read a lot and I'm curious. I'm really curious about everything. One day I thought, I'm just going to do it. And yeah.
What did you sign up for? What school study?
So I'm studying transactional analysis and counseling, which is a model of psychology which observes human behavior and how we act and our ego states. And it's so interesting. And I kind of like the journey to get there was quite interesting, because for a few years now, I've wanted to get involved with the kind of talking therapy side of things, but with a sprinkle of like magic on top, you know, not really, not just the generic in an office talking. There's so many more levels of therapy I want to do it with people. And I sort of came across the model of transactional analysis, and I was like, wow, you know, things, we invent a life script at a really young age, and we live out the rest of our lives according to the script. And so my job is to analyze that and help people break it down and rebuild it. And it's, yeah, it's really cool. I really love
it. That's so fucking cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
You made a good point, right? Like, we have these few active paradigms that kind of tangent. Like, someone yesterday mentioned on another podcast that reality is what most people agree with. Mm. It's not even what is, but what most people agree with, right? And it's kind of like we've been told, like, you get rich by working hard, and like these and these people are bad people, these and these are good people. This is the way to learn, right? From a textbook, just like repeating theory. And we kind of like, yeah, and that becomes the reality, because we are all like, too few people question it or even like understand that that's a possibility, right? To even question it.
Yeah. And people have no idea that they can just make up a different reality whenever they want, you know. And it's like we all fall into this narrative, like you said, you have to work really hard to earn money, and there's got to be this big struggle, you know, to like to have nice things. And we're sort of just, we just go along with that, like, oh well, you know, and we just accept it, and we never think outside of the box, like, hang on a second, I don't need to work hard, and I can still get paid, you know. It's about working smarter. And just being curious about how you could push those boundaries and raise those ceilings, you know. So that's why what I'm studying is so interesting, because you get to unpick all of these things. And it's not so much just even parents, it's like society, the pressure of society, you know, patriarchy and all that, especially on women, you know, we're put in this box of what we can achieve and that's it. Whereas like it's really interesting to kind of get to the bones of it and see where did all this come from. Where did it come from? Why do we think this way? So, yeah, it's
so good. Yeah. I'm so excited for you. And it sounds so like mind expanding.
Mm. Yeah.
So how did you get to it?
It was interesting because I'd kind of been looking at courses online, you know, when you're just searching and nothing felt right. There was lots of like counseling and psychology. I applied to university to do a psychology degree. And it just didn't feel right. And then I actually put something on Facebook. I said, you know, is anyone trained in Scotland to be a therapist? And someone linked me to this girl, and she's like, oh, hey, I studied with these guys. So it was like a private sort of, you know, learning institution. And so, you know, I pay for my own education and stuff. And so I sign up for it and I get accepted. And then I find out that my therapist did exactly the same course.
What?
It was crazy. And then I find out that my best friend also applied for the same course, so now we're doing it together. He's one of my best friends, he's a really close friend, and I was just catching up with him one day and I was like, oh, I've applied for this course, and he's like, I'm applying for that course. And it was just so like, you know, it felt exactly where I needed to be.
And for my idea, is it like an acknowledged certification? Like, I don't know how it works in Scotland. Like, I know it's every country has like a different metric.
Yeah, that's right. So there's a sort of so the COSCA, which is the Scottish Counseling Association, it's all recognized by them. So I'll essentially be like a psychoanalyst or a psychotherapist, some, you know, the kind of words, or a transactional analyst. So it's that kind of field that I'll be able to go into. But yeah.
So it's like a PhD, bachelor, master, some along those lines.
It's a diploma. So it's a 4-year diploma. Yeah. So
gotcha.
And then I could go ahead and do further study. I think with this kind of thing, I'm never going to not be studying. I'm going to be studying now for the rest of my life. And I freaking love that. And I didn't ever think I'd say that. I'm like, you know, reading books about something I love. And I mean, you read a lot, right? You're like always learning as well. So it's just that thirst for knowledge. It's just so good.
Yeah. And for the Americans listening, how much does a year of school cost over there on a private institution?
So this one, it's like, it's actually pretty good. It's like £2,000 a year. But that's because I live here.
You hear that, people? Private institutions costing $2,000 a year.
Yeah.
This is how the world works. This is the rest of the normal world.
You know, if someone comes over, though, as a foreign student to learn in Edinburgh, they have to pay like $35,000.
Well, I mean, I guess.
Yeah. it's crazy. It's mad. But I think it's a part-time course as well, so I could still work, you know, to fund my education.
Perfect.
Which is ideal.
And do you have to, what's the English term? Like, go somewhere, like, as an intern or as an apprentice or something?
Yeah, so the first year, which is the year I'm doing now, it's all about, you know, learning about the model itself, breaking it all down, picking the whole thing apart and putting it all back together, but then also self-awareness and self-analysis and stuff. And then next year I'll be on placement. So they'll put me in, you know, into charities or institutions where I actually have to start practicing and stuff. And then after 4 years, you know, it'll determine where I go. And, you know, I really want to work within the prison system. That's where my heart feels right at the moment, because, you know, people who are repeat offenders, you know, a lot of this stuff's trauma based, you know, and I know that a lot of people have that idea, just like, oh, just fucking get rid of them, put them in jail. And that this doesn't work. The system doesn't work, you know, just by locking people up. So I kind of want to do a little bit of work within there. That's what I feel like I want to do now. That might change. But that's where my heart's sitting at the moment. Yeah.
Oh, that's deep. Yeah, I can be very hostile against, like, certain offense.
Yeah.
Because I feel that there's too much focus on the one who did it instead of its victims, if that makes any sense.
For sure, yeah.
But yes, I do. I do feel that the prison systems are not to rehabilitate or like anything. It's not even a punishment at this anymore. It's just a monetary model or something. I don't even know what it is anymore.
Yeah,
because it completely lost it. Oh, you're so, I love that. Look, you're so special. Okay, and just for everyone, do you remember how we met?
I think so. It was through Mick, right?
Yes.
Yeah. which is crazy, because knowing him and knowing you, I don't know how you guys, are you guys friends or?
Like, we've been on and off for like year friends, no, and yeah. I don't even know how that happened. Because that goes way back. I know I saw you one time on his Instagram.
Yeah.
And I went to your Instagram or Facebook. I don't even know. Yeah. Some social media. And you were playing on your guitar and singing. I'm like, this is the most magical person I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, mate. Thank you.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, it's funny though, because Barry, you have like, you have totally... You've taught me so much, and I don't think even, you know, I'm going to just get deep for a second, right? You honestly, just you being who you are and just unapologetically being you, you've hit so many points of my like thought process, and I'm like, wow, it's just completely opened my mind to so many different things. So I just want to thank you personally, because you just being who you are, it's just, you're just great. You're amazing. And
I'm gonna cry.
But you're so good at just being you, and it's what the world needs, and it's great. And I love how you like the questions that you ask and the way you write and the way you ask them, and you just get people to think about stuff that they've probably never thought about before. That's great.
Well, it's in the questions, right, where we find expansion, I guess.
And it's like being curious about yourself in a way that you probably haven't been before. And there's been many questions you've asked, and I'm like, hey, what do I think about that? You know, I'll spot it for a while, and I'll be like, fuck, I don't know. But yeah, it's good.
Oh, and I love the research within self. Like, even what do I feel or what do I think about this? And then come to conclusion, did I actually come up with that myself? Or did I like kind of adapted that from someone else?
Yeah, that's what's good to unpick, right? Is this an external, not like bit of knowledge, or is this actually what I think?
Yeah
And I don't think we spend enough time alone to actually have those thoughts.
Absolutely, because too much distraction
always, and this, especially, you know, with what's been going on in the world, like, we're just so distracted. We have no idea what we even think, because we're just full of thoughts of everything else. This constant stream of information. And it's a lot.
So you've been celebrating something special this week online, your sobriety.
Yeah.
670 days, right? 670.
Yeah. It's been a fucking ride. It's been incredible.
So would you share with us a little bit? So this is, alcoholism or substance abuse has been very prevalent in my life, in my surroundings.
Okay.
This year.
Yeah.
I have zero context. I used to love my cocaine, but not as a, like, you know, I could,
yeah,
like, I haven't done cocaine for years. Fine. Like, it's not something. So I don't understand it. Like, I have a psychology degree, so I understand it from the theoretical side. But also, like, the variety of substance abuse and how diverse people use it, right? Some get really angry drunks, and some get, like, really floaty and free drunks, and, like, everything in between. So would you share anything? Everything, anything?
Yeah, I mean, like you, alcohol has been a thing that's been, it's been in my life for, since I was a kid. You know, I won't talk too much about, you know, my parents or anything, but they definitely came from backgrounds of alcohol abuse, and that was definitely prevalent, you know, in my upbringing. And then I was 19 years old when my dad passed away, right? Very suddenly. It was like a real sudden, 1 minute he was here and the next minute he was gone. 42 years old, really fit and really healthy. And that was really what kickstarted my, you know, alcohol. It was lack of connection. You know, there was no connection, because my mum was suffering so bad that she was non-existent. So it was almost like losing both parents at 19. And then I developed a really bad cocaine habit as well. The guy I was seeing at the time was a dealer. So it was like fucking perfect. I could just wake up and take any drugs I want for as long as I need to. And then, you know, my entire 20s were just drinking and going out. And then I moved. I lived in Australia for a while, massive drinking culture there. And then I lived in London. And then, again, a huge drinking culture. So I just developed this, like, habit. You know, I don't love the term alcoholic or anything like that, but I just developed a real deep-rooted connection with alcohol. This bottle of wine was like my best friend. It was always there for me. No matter what I was feeling, I could turn to the substance for whatever I needed it to do. And but I slowly got to the point where I was like blacking out every time I was drinking. I was just doing stupid shit. I mean, sometimes I can't believe I'm alive when I think about how drunk I got and the situations I ended up in. I actually can't believe I'm alive sometimes. Like, I look back and I'm like, there's definitely something looking after me. So, you know, it got to the point where I was always trying to moderate my drinking. I was always thinking, right, I'm not going to drink on a weekday, and I'm not going to drink at this time. And then I'll only drink on these days, and I'll drink a glass of water, and nothing worked. I just always fell back into the same patterns. And so I was in the train station once, and it was like a lightning bolt to the head, just like a message really clear, like, you can't drink any more alcohol at all. And I was like, I can't not drink. This is like one of the biggest things in my life. You know, I go out and I drink, and it's a huge part of my life, of my culture. I mean, Scottish people, like, we're renowned for drinking. But it was a clear message, and it was like, you're not going to survive if you keep drinking like this. So I just started reading books, and I started following Facebook pages of sobriety, and not really thinking I could ever do that, but I just took it one day at a time. And I just, it was horrible. I mean, there was nights when I was in the house crying because I just wanted to drink wine. So that was the point when I was like, okay, this is a problem. Because if it wasn't an issue, if it wasn't a habit, there's no way there'd be tears. I was lying on the floor crying. I just wanted a glass of wine. And in that moment, I was like, this is really fucking hard. So I got a therapist, and because I knew that I had to talk about all the shit that was coming up from not drinking. And I just took it one day at a time. And it was the hardest thing ever at the start. I didn't know where I was meant to be. I had friendships that didn't exist anymore because they were based around alcohol. Even like the relationship with like my mom, we'd get together and drink a lot. And I was like, what do I do now? How do I connect with her? There was just so much, but it took some time and I got sober. I hit the sort of 90 days. 90 days is the like sort of magic amount of time where you can, the habit breaker, they say, you know, 90 days and you've broken the habit. And so, yeah, and honestly, now being out the other side of it, I could not imagine ever drinking again. I just couldn't imagine it. Every single part of my life has got better. Every single part. There's not a single part that's not better. I mean, I've literally been at the point where I've not wanted to be here, and I've just wanted to drink myself into oblivion. And then, you know, coming out the other side of that, and now I'm like studying, about to buy a house, you know, like it's literally a whole life turnaround. And it was just removing that one substance. And I genuinely had no idea it had that much power over me. I just thought, because alcohol's so normalized, right? It's glamorized. We could get it anywhere, you know, whatever drug. I mean, I've done all the drugs, but you could just walk into a store and get some. So, and it's still hard sometimes, you know, if I'm out dinner and everyone's getting drunk. And the real reason is because I just don't enjoy it being around drunk people now. It sucks if you're not on the same wavelength. So those are the times I just have to go home early, and sometimes it feels sad, but then I just come home, I'll study, and I'll just make sure I'm doing something that fills me with joy, you know, and just remember why I do this, you know, like play the tape forward. There's times I'd wake up in like strangers' beds. I have no idea who these people are. I mean, there's times I'd have people would be in my house. The worst stuff, you know, waking up on the street, like lost all my money. Just the worst. So I'm so grateful at this point for myself and my own willpower that I just managed to get myself out of that blackness. That's what I could describe it as, just the darkness. So
I'm so, so fucking proud of you.
Thanks.
So fucking proud of you, because it requires such fucking courage and bravery to do something which you don't know yet how it feels.
Yeah, it was so scary. Like to get sober and basically be out in the open. I've never felt that vulnerable in my life. I was so, I felt like a stray dog in a shelter that was terrified. You know, I didn't know the world without alcohol. I didn't know it. It's all I've ever known and you know, the whole time I've been alive. And I didn't know how to function in the world without it. I didn't know how to be in public without a drink. I'd have a drink on the train on the way home from work. I didn't know how to be on the train with sober. So it was like a whole learning process. But, you know, it seems really scary. And if there's anyone listening to this that feels like that, you know, coming out the other side, it is, I just feel like a fucking superhero now. Like, I feel like I could do anything. I could do anything now. And nothing is hard anymore. It's all, I mean, life, you know, stuff's hard, but I could cope now.
Whew. Oh, goosebumps and tears. Do you, in your own personal journey, when you were still reaching for the bottle, would it like, it's like building up a tolerance for the alcohol. Was that a part of it? Like, did you start at just being tipsy once in a while versus, like, what was the shift to using so much that you were blackout? Or was it, like, blacking out straight from the moment you, you know, started using alcohol as a remedy or relief?
So it's really weird because, it's not weird, it's interesting, but sometimes what can happen is if you're drinking till blackout, which is essentially, like, your body shutting down, sometimes the brain remembers that, you know, the hippocampus remembers the steps and goes, okay, I know what's coming. And so it can actually happen quicker than normally you would have. And, you know, I was always, and, you know, it depends how quickly you drink. Now, my like party trick, I could drink a huge glass of red wine in like 3 seconds. I could just down the whole thing, you know, and this was like the rate of which I would drink, especially if I was in a cycle of feeling depressed, you know, that victim mode. And this is looking back, like, I could see that, you know, you really do become the victim with alcohol, and it helped. It's very clever, because it'll encourage that feeling, you know, it's okay, you know, you could be the victim, cry your tears. And I'd be in that victim mode. And honestly, towards the end, I was blacking out all the time. You know, the guy I'm with now, the relationship I'm in now is so amazing and so stable. And I kept thinking, I'm going to lose this guy if I keep drinking, because I don't know what I'm capable of when I'm blacking out. Like, I would shock myself, the stuff that I would do. You know, I mean, people would tell me stuff that I've done, and I would just, I mean, I ended up in like jail. I got arrested. I got an assault charge. Like, I hit someone, you know, and like, but the whole time, I got arrested in an airport. Like, it got really bad. And the whole time I'm thinking, I'm the victim. I'm the one that's suffering, you know, and it keeps you in this cycle, this loop. So towards the end, I think my brain just knew how much I was going to drink. And this was like a cope. This was like a protection thing. Like, okay, I'm going to black out now so she doesn't drink anymore. Because, you know, the body gets so poisoned. I mean, I ended up in hospital a lot of times as well. I was in hospital so much with my heart with alcohol. So, yeah, it was, I think towards the end, the blackouts were every time I would drink, every single time. And I don't know if it's getting older or hormones or what it was, but it was so scary. Like, and then what would happen is I would drink more to forget the nights that I couldn't remember. You know, so I'm constantly drinking, because I'd wake up, my partner's not talking to me, and I'm like, what's wrong with you? And he's like, I can't fucking deal with you anymore. I'm like, what happened? You know, he wouldn't want to talk about it. And then I find out I've done the most horrendous shit, said the most horrible shit. And that's just not me. I'm not that person. And it's just the pain all coming out. The pain's just coming out. It's years of unprocessed trauma just leaking out, you know, of my body. And just not stopping. But I just, that point when that thought came into my head was like, it was like, I don't know what it was, but it saved my life. If I kept drinking the way I was drinking, something bad was going to happen to me. I know that for sure.
So fucking profound. I've noticed, like, I'm glad that you mentioned the victim part, because witnessing it again, like, as an outsider, it's been such a ride to observe someone feeling victimized by something, whether that's legit or not, right? Like, whether legit harm has been done unto that person, and then that person drinking and then feeling angry or victimized or feeling any type of way about you to the behavior it caused, right? So it becomes like this self-fulfilling, like the spirit of alcohol. That's what I call it, because I don't have any better words. Like, it will feed itself so you'll keep utilizing it. That's how it looks for me as the outside.
That's exactly what it is. It's this spirit that lives inside you. It's almost like this real dark, you know, I did a lot of like plant medicine stuff, and I did this ayahuasca ceremony, and I looked the alcohol spirit right in the eyes, and it was the most fucking terrifying thing I've ever seen. I've never seen anything so scary. And what the image was that the chain, she had her chains around my hands and around my feet, and she was looking me in the eyes saying, I'm never going to let you go. I've got you. Like, you know, this is like, I'm like, you're mine. Your body is mine. And this is what, you know, when you black out drunk, and so when you're blacked out, and you're unaware of what's going on, but you're still doing stuff. You know, you could still be in a club or a bar or having sex with someone. That spirit is like inhabiting your body and using your body as a vessel. So it's like, great. And that just cycle just keeps repeating. It keeps you stuck in that loop. And it's, you cannot get out of it unless, like, you know, you have one of those moments. And I know society's got a real, like, you know, view of people who drink, but I don't think they really understand, like, that trap that you're in. And it's not as easy as just, oh, you know, stop drinking or go to read. It's not that easy. It's so deep.
I'm so glad you mentioned this, because I'm one of those. I was one of those people. You know, coming from East Europe, vodka galore, right? Or beer galore. I always had a disdain, like proper disdain for alcohol. I got that from my mom. I had never experienced any alcohol around me, but my mom was always very verbal about it. And I adopted that, which it resulted in that I had like an aversion against alcohol. And now last year I started like, I want a healthy relationship with alcohol, meaning I can go to a fucking fancy ass restaurant and I can enjoy one glass of wine. Again, just for the taste, not because of what it does, right? So I had to research that for myself. It looks like a level of self-destruction. And now that we're more in spiritual communities and we're talking about, you know, nervous systems and coping mechanisms, it all started making much more sense. So I owe everyone who I judged harshly absolutely an apology. And what still is very prevalent for me is that, you know, we've all, like, I've lost friends to cancer. I've lost friends to, you know, car accidents and people who really wanted to live. And it almost looked to me like a disrespect to the gift of life by harming the body and vessel and soul so much, right? But I love, the way you explain this with the spirit, like chaining you and using you as a vessel. Shit, that's so profound. That's so fucking deep.
You know, and even after that point, I still couldn't stop drinking because even after like that, it was a few years after that, but that image never left me. And then what was really interesting was when I was quite drunk, I would like flirt with the idea of this, you know, this vision that I saw, and I would start to sort of dance with this, you know, demoness, this alcohol essentially. And it just became this like horrible, like, you know, relationship with this dark spirit. But that's what alcohol does. It pulls you down into that darkness, and it makes it seem, you know, like it's romantic, and it's, you know, it's addictive to be down there. And especially, you know, there'd be times where I'd be drunk on my own in my flat with my guitar, and, you know, I felt like I was amazing, and but, you know, like looking back, I'm like, that was just so dark, you know, like at the time thinking I was in full control at that point, and there was just no control at all.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go.
No, and I love that because you're such, like, I feel like we still have the society idea that it's kind of like, you know, basically like loser people, whatever that means, right? That, you know, that use alcohol, and then you're such a bright, such an intelligent, such a beautiful, right? Like a person who has life in order to several extents. So it's so our vision of that spirit alcohol that it inhabits only like, I don't know, fucking homeless people or something is so inaccurate. And would you say there was something that you would gain when engaging with the demoness of alcohol, right? Like, I know that a lot of like very, very introverted people, they'll start to be a little bit more extroverted, or a little like shy people start to be more funny. Like, so was there a direct like return of investment for you that, or just not feeling?
You know what's interesting? Yeah, so numbing for me was the main thing. I was just, it was like I was self-medicating. You know, I was just taking, every glass of wine was just taking a tablet to just soften how I really was feeling inside, which was, it was too painful to pay attention to. You know, I was just drinking to numb the pain, and I realize that now. But what's really interesting is I always thought I had social anxiety, right? And that I just thought, you know, I would go out to a bar and I would be really anxious, and so I would drink really quickly just to take the edge off, you know. And what's really interesting now is I actually don't have social anxiety. What I've realized is what I was anxious about was how drunk I was going to get and what I was going to do when I was going to be drunk. Like, so, and because now I could go out sober. I mean, I've been at part, I mean, at the, when I first went sober, I couldn't really go anywhere. I had to become like super, I had to really go inward. I was in the house, you know, just going through the motions. And I struggled to go out for dinner or do anything where alcohol was, because it was just too much temptation, too much heart. It was like, you know, you've got to grieve that old person. You're literally, that old, that version of me doesn't exist anymore. And, you know, I'll have friends that will say, oh, I miss the old Laurie. And I'm like, yeah, well, you know, she doesn't exist anymore. But I would sort of eventually, now I could go to party. I was at my best friend's party out of lockdown. I was like giving everyone shots. I was playing drinking games. I had a fucking great time. I was dancing around. And everyone's like, what have you been drinking? I was like, coffee, you know. And then I just, once I'd had enough and everyone started to get sloppy and, you know, kind of loud, I thought, cool, it's time for me to go. And I just went home, had a pizza and just had the best night ever. So I was really curious about that. And I was like, why do I not have social anxiety anymore? I didn't ever have it. I was terrified of what I was going to do when I was drunk. And that was where the anxiety was coming from. It was just learned. I just learned that it would always end up bad. I think I convinced myself I had to drink to be social. And this was just a lie. But I think deep down for me, it was just to be able to numb myself, fully numb myself. Which is crazy because the next day when you wake up, it's just 10 times worse. You know? And then you drink again. I would just orchestrate my life around alcohol, like friends, oh, let's go for a Sunday lunch, meaning I want to drink, or let's meet for sushi, but I wanted to have wine. You know, it was always just linked to alcohol. That was just the, it was never just about, never about the food or the friends, it was always about the alcohol. So it's interesting. But yeah, I know what you mean about this kind of false confidence and stuff, but I'm more confident now that I don't drink. It's crazy.
And I also feel like we as a society have this narrative that people who engage with the spirit of alcohol, that they do it every day versus I have, again, just recently learned that I know people who abuse the substance just when they have too many feelings. And that could be like once a month, but it's still their go-to when, you know, the pressure gets high or something.
Yeah, so that's like, it's, you know, society's got this idea that to be an alcoholic, you have to be a drunk guy in a park, you know, drinking every day out of a paper bag, right? But, you know, deep down, like, actually, if you drink once a year and you fuck everything up and you drive your car and you, like, you know, that's problematic drinking. If you're blacking out just once a year, it's still a problem. You know, I think if you could go out to a restaurant, enjoy a nice glass of wine and go home, that's great. That's a really healthy relationship with alcohol because it can be very enjoyable. But if you're just drinking once a month, if you're binge drinking once a month, it's still an alcohol use disorder. It's not how often you drink, it's how you drink. So if you're drinking for something to numb a pain, or if you're drinking and there's an underlying reason, then it's problematic. If you're just drinking to enjoy your friend's company or because it complements the food, that's healthy. But if there's something, if you're drinking for a reason, you know, whether for confidence or to numb something, then you don't have to be drinking every day for it to be a problem. And I think you're right, society has taught us that in order to be an alcoholic, you have to be, you know, really drunk every day and lost your job and lost your car and your kids don't talk to you. But it's so far from the truth. I don't know why we're there. I don't know why. Maybe because it sells, right?
Yeah. The narrative sells. Yeah, for sure. So on to the new Laurie. Like, you're in the middle of this. Would you call it like even detoxing? Like, I know when we are detoxing, whether it's from actual substances or from certain behavior, or when we withholding from it or withdrawing from it, that the inner demons, they start negotiating like their life depends on it. They get really fucking creative, really creative.
Yeah. And this still goes on in my head. Like, sometimes I still have thoughts like, I could probably just drink for one night. Yeah. I could probably go out with my friends, and I catch it and I'm like, these aren't my thoughts. And I'll straight away say, you know, not today. I'm not drinking today. And I just take it, you know, one day at a time. And but it's so interesting because that night I could be just be driving the car and this conversation's going on and I'm like, this isn't mine. This is not my shit. yeah, that's interesting. Because now, I mean, I'm 2 years sober in December, and that I think that'll always happen. You know, you have to catch it.
So how do you cope with sitting in that fresh moment of that, you know, at this point, it's not even subtle conversation. Like, the demons are going at you, the inner demons. You're having probably also like physical sensations of not having alcohol, right? Like, how do you get through that? Like, do you distract, or do you not distract and like completely be in it? Like, what worked for you, and how was that process for you?
I just observe. I'm curious about it. And I think this is part of, you know, being in therapy. This is what it teaches you. I ask lots of questions, you know, where did that come from? I find if I distract myself, I'm just suppressing it. And then it can just get louder and louder and louder until eventually it's like, it's funny. I said this to my mum. When I first went sober, the voices of these demons were like someone screaming through a megaphone. But now it's more like a whisper. You know, it's like they're on my shoulder, they're whispering, but it's still right in my ear, you know? So it's like, I'll just sit and I'll listen to it, and I'll just be like, that's not true, or that's not my truth. Where's this coming from? And I'll explore it a bit more, and I'll try and unpick the whole thing. And sometimes I'll even listen to like a podcast just to refresh my memory of all the stuff that I've learned. Cause I read a lot of books when I first went sober, and they helped massively. So sometimes it's just about, and having a mantra as well. A mantra is really important. I think everybody who's not drinking, you need to have some sort of mantra. Like, and mine would be, okay, I'll drink tomorrow. I'll drink tomorrow. Because that was always like, I'm not drinking today, I'll do it tomorrow. And I would just never do it tomorrow. Tomorrow never came.
Wow.
That would often silence the demons as well. Like, okay, I'll drink tomorrow. You know, and they would, okay, great. But then, so it's just about finding your way around that voice. And I honestly don't think that's ever going to leave me. You know, I'm going to go through more hardships in my life. And the really easy thing when my grandpa died just recently in lockdown, it was really loud. It was like, you know, you could just have a drink and this is going to be so much better, you know, with, you know, family and stuff. You can just have a drink, give him a toast, you know. It was like, wow, that I can't do this. But that, I mean, when you go through stuff like that, I could go through anything now. If when you don't do it, you know what's the most amazing thing in the world? When you've been having those thoughts all night, like battling yourself all night, don't have a drink, don't have a drink. When you don't do it, that feeling the next day, I wish I could bottle it up and sell it. It's like nothing else I've ever experienced. It's, you're just so proud of yourself. You're just so happy for your choices, and that's made me love myself so much, that feeling. It's the first time I've been like, wow, I'm really grateful for myself and my mind and my body. It's taught me self-love on a massive level, because I'm just really looking after myself now. And I know that if I did have a drink, even one, that feeling the next day would be very, very different. So I focus on that. I think that's what gets me through, is the, like, think about how you're going to feel in the morning. That's what carries me on, because it's euphoric, actually.
And that's hard to explain to someone who has never felt that before.
Yeah.
And this goes for everything, whether this is you know, working out, you know, hydration, doing things that, you know, would literally level you up.
Yeah.
Like, it in the moment, it fucking like sucks so fucking much. And I remember, you know, I just started running again after. Mm-hmm. Because I live in a desert, so there's no running, because it's 49 degrees. So like there's, and at night it's 39 degrees, right? So there's none of that. But so I just started running, and I can truly enjoy because like negotiation, right? Stop running. Yeah. Let's do tomorrow. Let's not do it at all. Or maybe just, you know, just do a little half ass running or something, or just, you know, just and learning just to go with that, regardless of understanding how you will feel. But then once you're like 7 days in,
yeah,
of like hydration and like nourishing your body, you're like, holy shit, I wish I could gift this to my former self, to everyone else, please. It's, And it's one of these things. There's this shrimp who apparently sees 7 million colors, or I don't know what the number is, right?
Yeah.
Us humans, we don't have an understanding of what that means, because we only see, I don't know, 256 colors or something like that. Again, so when someone says like, yeah, you're going to see 7 million colors, and we're going to be like, that makes no sense, because I don't have the comprehension of imagining that. But then you see the colors and you're just like,
yeah, it's crazy. I did it in the sauna this morning. I was like, after 5 minutes, I was like, oh, I can't, because I just swam for like a good 40 minutes. And then I got in the sauna, and right as soon as I got in, I was like, I can't do this today. And I was just breathing through it. And I'm like, you're going to die if you stay in here any longer. But, you know, I pushed through to the 20 minutes, and then I had a cold shower. That feeling after that cold shower is like, I honestly think if you could like turn that into a tablet, it would be the best antidepressant ever. You know, if you needed to get out of anything, that would be what it is. But to get yourself to that point, it takes so much inner work. You know, like self-care, and you're the same. Self-care is the most important thing in my life right now. Like, and it has been for a while. You know, and I know that it's changed some of my friendships, it's changed some of my relationships, but self-care is just so, so important. And that is self-care, is getting yourself to having those moments where you're super proud of yourself. Like that, it's so important.
And I feel a huge part of that is, 'cause I know all the fucking powerhouses I have around me, such as yourself. I know y'all been through real shit.
Yep.
And it's kind of like, what for me was very prevalent is dissecting my resilience from trauma, from actual surviving. Building resilience is not the same as having to, you know, go through trauma or surviving. They're complete different things. Building resilience, you can do in a safe container. It's just uncomfortable. But when we've too much experienced trauma or survival, like they're so linked to each other. Mm-hmm. To anybody think we're dying.
Yeah.
No, the fuck you're not.
Yeah.
It's just, but we are being taught constantly that, you know, not experiencing non-pleasurable feelings equals death to a point now where it's so bad or it's so horrible. And the outside, the other side of that, that's such a, it's, yeah, like you said, it's indescribable. It's, if you could gift it to everyone and bottle it, fuck.
I wish I could give it for Christmas presents, that feeling.
Ooh,
but like, yes. I feel like, what was I say? Yeah, I think people feel like that when they feel bad, it's going to last forever. So in the sauna, you know, this morning, I'm like, this is temporary. It's all temporary. And that's what you have to realize, that even in those moments of pain and of real adversity, you're not going to always feel like that. You just have to hang on. You know, you just have to hang on. I used to have this reoccurring dream where there was like a hurricane or a tsunami or something, and I'm just like holding on to this tree, and I would never stop, and it would always just disappear, and nothing would be around me, but I would be there and I'd be alive because I just held on. That's the kind of narrative that I try and use, like, no matter what happens, no matter what hits me, just get through it. And that doesn't mean you know do this toxic positivity bullshit, like, oh, everything happens for a reason. None of that shit. It's literally like facing it, crying, going through, like screaming if you have to, just get through it, and out the other side is that fucking euphoria. It is there, but you have to power through. And I think, you know, society is set up in a way, you know, we've got Facebook and all these outlets where we can play the victim and we can be the sort of victim of our own story. And
it's rewarding.
Yeah, it is. And it is because society does reward these, you know, I used to do it. Sometimes I look at my old Facebook posts, you know, from 7 years ago, and I'm like, oh, baby Laurie, come on. You know, it's real sad to see, but, you know, it's part of the journey. But yeah, I wish I could bottle up that. Even just teaching people to real self-care. I wish everyone could just have a little bit of that. Like, really, though. Not the kind of, like, I'm having a bath and putting it on Instagram. Like, real deep self-care. Like, you're number one, always.
Mm-hmm. And how would you... because I noticed that when people let go of a old self, that they're kind of like eager to cling on the first tool that comes around. And how would you describe first of all, there's no one tool fits all, right? Like that self-care and coping in a healthier way, like it looks differently for everyone. And I noticed that people once they get themselves over the hump of, you know, okay, I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, trying on the first coping mechanism or the healthy one, right? And that one is a shitty one. Then I'm like, okay, see, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like how do you navigate through kind of like the buffet of life and systems in order to find what actually complements your soul and your body and your nervous system?
1,000,000%. And I think because people often reach out to me and say, often about sobriety or these things, and they say, what did you do? And I say, look, it's not what I did isn't going to work for you, because you've not lived the life that I've lived, and I've not lived the life that you've lived. So it's like, I could tell you what I did and you could do all of those steps, but that doesn't mean you're going to get sober. Like, my advice is always like, be curious about yourself. When we get into a relationship with someone, you know, we totally fall into them, and we learn all about them, and we ask all the questions. When the fuck does anyone do that with themselves? Most people don't even know themselves. So I can't recommend you a bunch of books if you don't normally read. You know, what if you learn best by listening to podcasts? And I think that's the key, is like being really curious about yourself, asking those questions. What music do I love? What do I like to eat? Because we become a concoction of all those people around us. I definitely fell into like groups of the new age spirituality stuff in London. And it was that kind of, you know, pretending that everything was fine, you know, positive vibes only, good vibes only, all that kind of stuff. And I did that for a really long time, and it just totally fucked me up. Like, there was so many communities, and, you know, the narrative was just, yeah, it was hard. And then, you know, moving back to Scotland was the real catalyst for me to do the groundwork. Like, okay, this shit's going to get real now. And I have to just dig these roots down deep and find out who I am. You know, I traveled the whole world in my 20s on my own. I traveled, after my dad passed away, I just went traveling around the world. I went to all these places by myself. Again, I can't believe I'm alive. I would get blacked out drunk in these countries. Stupid shit, right? Oh, I could tell you some stories. But then I ended up back in, you know, where I'm from. And it was like, oh, okay, this is where I've got to do the work. And that, you know, I think there's something in that. It's, you know, the story of the alchemist, and he goes away and just, it's right there. So.
That's so beautiful. That's so beautiful. So fucking powerful. You're such a powerhouse. Always have been. But seeing the evolution of you from the outside, so fucking powerful.
Thank you.
So maybe as a close off, what would you tell, what's your age right now?
I'm 35.
Okay, so what would you tell 22-year-old Lori?
Just,
doesn't have to be short, anything.
Yeah, I would just say, be gentle with yourself and ask for help. Because I just thought, my biggest coping mechanism was, I have to do everything by myself. You know, I'm this independent woman. I don't need anyone.
Hyper independent.
Yeah, hyper independence to the point where, you know, I would just, yeah, I was just on my own. And I mean, that was good for some lessons, but just probably just to reach out and try and find some connection. You know, that would probably be the little message I'd send to myself.
That's beautiful. Do you feel that like having the hyper independence, that part of healing that was like learning how to receive without, you know, you being too much or your burden, or I don't know what message, like everyone has a version of their why they don't ask for help.
Yeah, for sure. I guess I just thought that I always told myself that nobody would want to hear from me or nobody would want to help me. And I was just being a problem, because my whole life I was told this at school and all this stuff. I was a problem, you know, so that narrative really stuck with me. So that hyper independence, just I didn't want to ask for help. And I still do it now. It's a thing I'm properly, you know, really learning to say, hey, can you help me with this? you know, and I, it's really hard for me, but I am getting better at it. But yeah, definitely, it's definitely been just a coping mechanism that I have. And it's also when you're on your own, no one can hurt you, right? Because there's no one close enough. So it's like, you can't hurt me because I'm not going to let you in far enough to do that. And I think a lot of us do that. We do, don't we?
Yeah. And we, because same, done that in the past, because we think that at least if I control what can hurt me,
yeah,
then I'll be fine, not realizing how much you're missing out and like robbing yourself from, meaning like love and vulnerability, yeah. Vulnerability not being the same as weakness, right? But because we don't celebrate weakness right now. That's victim consciousness. Yeah. We celebrate fucking weakness.
Yeah, it's I don't know what's going on just now, but it is a tough one at the moment. It's a lot. But yeah, vulnerability is so endearing, and it's so I'm good at being vulnerable now. Like I can actually like, you know, just be vulnerable unapologetically, which I think is a gift.
Which is powerful, extremely. The paradox of allowing yourself to be vulnerable is such a fucking power move. It's not weak at all. It's such a fucking brave move and courageous and everything.
Yeah, yeah. It's huge. And it's sweet when you can be vulnerable with other people. You know, you've just got those little moments of like, it's like, wow, we're both humans, and you really get... like if someone's vulnerable with you and they show that raw emotion, you instantly feel connected to them. So why have we shut that off for so long? You know, I don't understand. It's such an amazing way to connect with people, is just being authentic and vulnerable. But we hide that so much.
That's it. So that's the end question for everyone listening. When did you decide to shut off the part of yourself that allows you to deeply, deeply and authentically connect with others?
When do I shut it off?
Like when did we do that? Because as children, we didn't have that. Like there's some point, right? Like at school or like, I don't know. Like there was some point where it was kind of from externally, and we accepted that belief that no.
Well, I think...
Because children have no problem. They're just like, look, this is happening, I'm feeling this. And we're like, oh, okay, baby.
But what I've noticed, and I see this a lot, and this was my whole childhood, was stop crying. Shut up, stop crying. You know, if you cry, this is going to happen. Or if you stop crying, I'll give you this, stop crying. And this, so it's like, and even at school, you know, no one would be vulnerable in school because everyone would laugh at you, right? So I think this is a narrative that is ingrained in us all, that we shouldn't show emotion, we shouldn't cry. I mean, especially in men, fuck, the only thing they know how to show is anger. But I think, you know, that whole stop crying thing, you know, I remember trying to hide my tears all the time as a kid. Crying is a superpower. Like, to be able to just get your emotions out just through your tears, it's like the best and easiest way to like process and heal your nervous system. Bang, it's done. Just have a good cry.
Yeah, and our body does that. And someone told shit, I don't even know. There was a scientist who explained that not the hormones, but like the thing in tears, our skin takes it in, and that creates the endorphins to heal.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm like, of course it fucking does. Of course it fucking does. How genius.
Yeah.
And perfect is that system.
Yeah, and actually, really, our whole body and our whole nervous system and all that kind of thing, it is so intelligent, but we've just shut it off completely. We really have, and we've put all this shit on top of it, and we have no idea. I mean, we're getting a better understanding now of how to heal the nervous system and all that thing. I mean, dancing, all that kind of stuff is just such an amazing way to heal. And I love to see women now dancing. I mean, there's so much that going on. I think your friend Jessie, she dances a lot, right? I love that. It's so nice to see. And there's a few other
Jessie shaking her
booty. Yeah. And there's a few other chicks that do it as well. And it's like, that's just moving that energy around the body. It's
beautiful.
Great. Yeah, it's so good. So I hope we can do more of that as women and as friends. We could dance more and cry more. Just
The best.
Yeah.
The best. With that being said, let's cry and dance more.
Yeah.
Thank you so, so, so much. I adore you so deeply. I can't wait to one day hug you so, so tightly that you're going to be like, I can't breathe. Yeah. Like, I'm sorry. I got too excited.
I know we're going to meet soon. I feel it. And depending on what happens, I might be in the States next year. So I might come and see you.
Perfect. You'll have a bedroom here. Always, always, always. Amazing. Thank you. And I'll put in the comments where people can find you.
Thank you so much. It's been great to
keep hydrated.
Yeah.
Self-care.
Makes you a millionaire.
Bye, listeners. Exactly. Self-care makes you a millionaire, rich and hydrated people. Everyone, thank you for listening here at Fearless Wealth with my amazing queen, witchy, Lori. And I'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
And as per usual, if you've enjoyed it or hated it, or just got sparked interest or had any feelings about this episode, take a screenshot, tag me, tag Fearless Wealth, share it on your stories, on your timeline, everywhere. Leave a review, share it with your friends secretly if you can't be public about it. And just to give you a heads up, the things that are going on currently, we have Blood Coach 2.0 coming up with Jessie Magic. The Dom course is fully live. The Dancing with the Demons is live. And the Money course will come at the end of the year. But meanwhile, get into that fearless wealth yourself. Celebrate gratitude. And as per always, don't forget to hydrate, because self-care makes you a millionaire and you are rich and hydrated.